So little time. So we begin with Yudbeis Amud Aleph on the third widest line.
Does anyone eat this?
No.
I don't think so. We're all very. We're all big lamdanim here. We don't need an art scroll.
This is good timing, right. Though. Right before.
Very good.
Does everybody have a gum?
I would never ever use an art scroll in my life.
Here we go. Chel parasu madai hapartamim. Okay? So we had already introduced the Megillah. By Hibimei Achashverosh, Hu Achashverosh, Samishta Lechol Sarav Ba'avadav. Right? Kesheves HaMelech Achashverosh, Bishna Shalosh Lemalchus HaSamishta Lechol Sarav Ba'avadav. Chel parasu madai hapartamim. It's the officers of parasu madai. Uksiv, and another pasuk says, "Lemalchei madayu paras." So get your story straight. Which one comes first, paras or madai, or madai and then paras? So the Gemara says, "Amar Rava." Actually, the pesukim are quite precise because asnui asnu bahadadi. They made a tanoi. They made a condition. They made a deal amongst themselves. Imi non malchi min aichu afarchi. If from us comes the melech, so then from you will come the officers. If from you comes the king, then from us will come the officers. So we have an agreement, we have an arrangement where nobody's going to be left out. If the melech is, if the appropriate melech were to come from you, then we will send, we are next in line, or the officers will be from us. So it's even Stephen. There is a book that Reb Sasson lent to me. It was very interesting, and they goes through some archaeological digs, and they find that many of the paintings have corroborating a lot of the stuff that comes up in the Agadatas and in Megillah, which is very, very interesting.
The sharing of the Malchus. One of them,
sharing of the Malchus, yeah. They have many of the portraits that show Madai and Paras, and they're each connoted with their own different way of kind of, drawing them up. Mm-hmm. And that you have, like, one portrait where it's, like, Madai Paras, Madai Paras, Madai Paras. Mm-hmm. And it's... It's mashma like this Gemara, where they have this arrangement where nobody's really going to be taking a lead per se. They have this this agreement amongst themselves. Anyway, Baharu Sois Osher Kavod Malchuso, when he was showing off, this is Achashverosh, showing off his Osher Kavod Malchuso, and it says, Ve'es Yikar Tiferes Gedulaso, right? The Yikar, the preciousness, the honor, Tiferes, of the glory of his greatness. Amr of Yosef Rav Chanina Malamid Shalavash Bigde Kahuna. This teaches us that he was wearing Bigde Kahuna. Achashverosh was. Ksiv Hacha, how do we know that? Because it says over here, Es Osher Kavod Malchuso, Ves Yekar Tiferes Gdulaso. Uksiv Hasam, and it says in Tetzave, Lechavot Letifares, that the Bigde Kahuna will be Lechavot Letifares. So the word Tiferes is used in both places. That is mashma that he was wearing Bigde Kahuna. And that concludes Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. We pick up on Thursday.
Okay. Early tonight?
Huh?
You started early tonight?
Yeah, no, you just came really late.
Not really.
Uvim los hayamim ha'ela. We're on the seventh wide line.
That's okay. I'll figure out if you don't tell me.
You figure it out. Uvim lo sayamim ho'ele, when these days had completed, Ravu Shmuel chalam or melech pikechayim. So the pasuk goes on to say, Uvim lo sayamim ho'ele asa ha'melech mishtel chol sarav avadav. He made a feast that included everybody, not just his particular city, but it was for everybody. So Ravu Shmuel chalam or melech pikechayim. Ravu Shmuel, one of them says that he was a very wise king, because V'chad Amr Melech Tipeshaya, and one of them says he was very foolish. Manda Amr Melech Bekechaya, the one who says he was quite wise. Shapir Avid, he made a very smart move by making a feast for everybody, not just his people. Dekar Rechika Beresha, D'Bnei Masa, he made a feast for everybody, that he was mekarev even the far off lands, the lands that were not in his immediate town and in his immediate area, before he made a feast for his own city, because kol emas the boy mefayis lehu. Anytime he needs, he can be mefayis them, and if anything happens, he can be mefayis anybody because he's already made friends with everybody. Umanda amar tipashaya. I'm sorry. The way that reads is the bnei masya kol emas the boy mefayis lehu. See, his immediate city, his immediate town, he's in very close proximity to them. So anytime if there's trouble, if they're causing trouble, or if they have problems, he can be mefayis them right away. But the far-off lands, he has no way of knowing what's really going on, what's rumbling. So what does he do? He makes a feast for everybody in order to be mekari of them, in order to befriend them, so that to stave off any potential ruse. But he doesn't need to do that for his immediate lands, because he could be mefayis them. He'll know. He'll be sensitive to anything that's happening in his immediate area. So he'll be able to mefayis them right away. Umanda amar tipashaya, the one who says that he was foolish. Di boile lekruvi b'neimasi b'reisha, he really should have made a feast for his immediate city. Di imar dube hanach hani havu kami ba'adei. Because first you have to establish a rapport, a relationship with those immediately surrounding you, so that if the far off lands decide that they're going to rebel, then his immediate city will be able to take action. But if he doesn't do that, then what if somebody, a far off city were to call a rebellion? So he wouldn't have anybody to back him up. He would just be he'd be stuck. There's probably what to be said over here. I'm not sure exactly. I don't know if this machlokes about melech tipish or melech, now that I read it, melech pikeach or melech tipish, is because of this. In other words, I don't think that they're arguing because of this particular point. I think that this machlokes Rabbi Shmuel, whether he is pikeach or tipish, is an overall overarching type of machlokes, meaning there's a machlokes, Rabbi Shmuel, and one of them says that he was pikeach, one of them is tippish. Not particularly because of this, but the one who says that he was pikeach, you can touch why he's making a feast for everybody like this. And the one that says he's a tippish, you can touch that opinion within this context as well. But I don't think that they're saying that he was a pikeach or a tippish specifically because of this.
Yeah, and the tipish swara was what? Why was he tipish?
He's a tipish because he has nobody to back him up. If he's making a feast for everybody, but he hasn't made a feast yet for his immediate town, yeah. So if there's a rebellion, if there's a revolution happening, who's going to back him up? He's got nobody. His own city doesn't even have a relationship with him. He hasn't created a rapport. So he's got nobody. He's dead. He's dead. He's finished. So that's the tipish guy. He's probably a tippish. Shalu Talmid of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. That's a fascinating Gemara. The Talmid of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai asked him a question. Why did Klal Yisrael deserve to be destroyed? Why do they deserve to die? Amar Laham, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says to his Talmidim, as a good Rebbe should do, Imruatem. Give me a svara. No, don't ask me. Give me a svara. So Amrilo, they said to him, we think it's because b'pnei shenenu misu'udoso shalosa rasha, because they partook of this su'udah that this rasha was making. Should not have done so. They should have kept their distance. The Klal Yisrael does best when they are by themselves. They should not be mingling with the other nations, and especially with osa rasha. Because they did so, they deserve klaya. They deserve to be destroyed. So he asks his Talmidim, if you guys are right, imkein shebeshushan yargu shebechol ha'olam kulo lal yargu. If you're telling me that the reason that they deserve to die is because they joined in the feast, so then those who joined in the feast deserve to die, i.e., the people in Shushan, they deserve to die. But everybody else, they were not nogeya. So why is everybody? Why is all Klal Yisrael mitzarif in this din? So Amru Lo, so then the Talmidim said, okay, Emorata, please tell us, Rebbe. Tell us why they deserve to die. Amru Lahem, so he says to them, why mipnei shehishtachvu l'tzelem? Because in the times of Nebuchadnezzar, they were bowing down to idols. And that, l'chaira, was all of them, or rubam. And therefore, because they were bowing down to the idols, they deserve to be die.
Do you know what the Medrash and Shir Hashirim says?
How could I not know what the Medrash and Shir Hashirim says?
No, I don't, but it seems like Rabbi Akiva Eger says that from Gilead and Shah says that the Medrash is conflicting.
Oh, really? Let me see, 1 second. Shalu Tamida, I Medrash Shir Hashirim, but plus Zos Kumoscha, the Mesa Tamar. Damsa Latamar. Why do you say that he's saying that it's conflicting?
Because he never just says, hey, check this out.
But that's true. That is, you are correct about that, that he's not just giving us a marimakom, but it's not a raya. I have not looked at the Medrash and Shir Hashirim on the Gilead HaShas here. I have not looked at that. Yeah.
This is a constant pattern in history, though. You know, why do all the Jews in the Egel Zahav? It's only 3,000 Jews, and Hashem was going to wipe out the whole nation.
Right.
So, I mean, why? You know, Kol Yisrael and all these different inyanim.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like, so you can say the same thing here. Not enough Jews, you know. Wasn't all
the nation. Enechanami. True. Okay. Good point.
It's based on the assumption that you could have done something about it. Yeah. But the Jews in Purim, the Jews in Shushan, and these were the other Jews who were way away. I mean,
no shaykhus, you're saying.
Yeah.
There are no shaykhus. Uh-huh. I hear that.
Maybe.
Okay, very, very good. That's fair. At any rate, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's response was that because they all bowed down to the idols, therefore they deserve to be destroyed. So Amru Lo, so then the Talmidim said to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, the Chimas Opanim Yesh B'davar? Is there favoritism in this matter? In other words, if you're telling me that the reason why they deserve to be destroyed is because they bow down to the idols, so then how can Hashem show favor to them by allowing them to be saved? Why did they deserve to be saved? You're telling me they bow down to the idols, so they deserve to be Misa. Apparently what they did is bad enough to deserve Misa, so then why do they deserve to be saved?
The Tshuva.
What?
The Tshuva. Was a mass tshuva moved. Yeah. The whole problem, yeah. Fasted for 3 days. And, I mean, they... it was like they were cobbling the Torah all over again.
Yeah. Kibbul and kibbul. Uh-huh. Why is that not good enough? Yeah. In a chanami. Rashi says, "V'chi maso panim yish b'davar eich zachu l'neis." How are they deserving of the nace? Okay, I don't know. I mean, that seems lachar. That's an obvious answer, right? They did tshuva. They could do tshuva for anything. Why do they deserve the nace to be? Okay, nechanami. I have to think about that. That's a good point. What I was thinking here was that the Talmidim originally gave a svara that they deserve to die because they joined mipnei shenenu misudaso shalosa rasha. And then he had a kasha on their svara, and then he gave a svara as to say that they were bound down to idols. And then they say, "Well, why did they deserve the nace?"
Yeah.
But then isn't the question on them also? If they're saying that the reason why they deserve to die is because they did something so bad, mishum shenenu misudasu shalosa rasha, so then isn't the same kasha on them? Same kasha. Why do they deserve to be saved? Are you telling me what they did was so bad they deserve to die because Shenanu Misudas Russia? So then, why are they deserving of the nace? Why is the question not on them? All right, I have a teretz, but it's more in depth. It's based on a Gemara in Brachos. But at any rate, I just was mayor that. But Amr Lahem. So he says, I'll tell you why they deserve to be shown favor. Heim lo asu el lepanim. So Afakarish Baruch Hu Lawasa Imain El Panim. When they bowed down to the idol, in a chanami they did something wrong. And it was a terrible thing. You don't want to bow down to idols, even if your kavana is not to bow down to an idol. But at the end of the day, they did it lepanim, meaning they did it superficially. In their hearts, they didn't want to bow down to the idols. They did it because Nebuchadnezzar put them in a position in which they had to do it. So they did it. They did it lamaisa. But they only did it lamaisa. They didn't do it bechavana. And since they didn't do it bechavana, so therefore it was only lefanim, it was only superficial. was only seeming to be bowed down, to be joining in with this Avodah Zarah, but it wasn't true worship. And therefore, Hashem only did it superficially, meaning he created this whole situation that sounded like, seemed like it was going to be where they were going to die, but really Hashem had in mind the whole time, had in mind that they weren't going to be destroyed at all. And this is what it means when it says in the pasuk, Hashem does not give inoy. He does not make somebody suffer milibo from his heart, meaning Hashem does not do it internally. He doesn't want somebody to suffer. And so here also, by the story of Purim, this whole situation that was created, that they were going to, they deserved to die, and they were going to die, that was all only a show, but it wasn't really what was going to happen.
Does that also bring down with Haman's ring? Haman was forcing people to bow down to him with the ring, but in their hearts he wasn't bowing. They were physically bowing down, but in their hearts, doesn't get brought down regarding during the Purim time.
It could be a Gemara later on. What
is that? The Gemara in Sanhedrin? That's the next Gilead Shas over there.
No, I don't. Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know. I think you're going to end by... I think by the time we're finished tonight, you're going to do your thesis on the Gilyon HaShas. I'm very much looking forward to hearing your...
anything that I thought I understood, it's probably not. Oh, I don't understand it either, right?
Note to self, look up every Gilyon HaShas when preparing. I'm no longer going to get away with giving cheer without Gilyon HaShas. God. All right. Gemara Rashi Gilyon HaShas. Here we go. Okay. Very good. The Gemara goes on, and says, "Bachatzar ginas bisan hamelach." Where was the party held? Bachatzar ginas bisan hamelach. So it's three different places: the chatzar, the gina, and the bais. So what's the pshat? Rav Shmuel, this is machlekes Rav Shmuel. Chad amar haroy lechatzar lechatzar haroy legina legina. Harul Abisan Labisan. Those who were fitting, those who deserve to be in the chatzar, they belonged out in the chatzar. Those who deserve to be a little bit closer in the gina, so they were in the gina. And those who were in the who were fitting to be in the palace itself, they got to be in the palace itself. The Chad Amar Hoshivan Bachatzar Belohsikasan. The other one says no. Really, he initially put them in the chatzar, but it was so big and there were so many people that it ended up bleeding into the gina. And then it was so many people in the gina, ended up leading into the bison, into the bias itself. Okay. The bison mechzikasan, and that was finally the palace was able to be machzik all of these people.
That's the opposite order that they said previously, where you would have like the inner villages and then the outer villages. So here you had people from the outside coming in, instead of people on the inner compound going out.
No, you're saying what is the machlokas here? Machlokas here is whether it was intentional, whether he intentionally puts specific people into the gina, chatzar, and bayis,
or it just
happened to be, it started out in the chatzar and there were just so many people, it was such a mass party that more people coming and it just bled right into the palace.
So is it a meritocracy or not?
Right. So, So says the says the Gemara Vayter, b'masnisa tana, it is learned in a brisa that Hoshivan b'chatzer, he put them in the chatzer, upasach lehem shnei psachim, and there were two entrances or two exits to the chatzer, echad legina ve'echad lebisan. So this is another opinion that really everybody was to be held in the initially in the chatzer, that was like the central meeting room. And then you can go from the chatzar into two different places, either to the gina or to the palace itself. Chur karpatzus secheles. This is a description of the palace. Was chur karpatzus secheles. Gemara is now going to darsh them, which eat what each of these are. My chur. What does it mean? Chur. Rav Amar Chari Chari. Rav says that the fabric that was used on the chairs and on the linens was chari chari. It was embroidered. So it was made, chari means holes. You embroider like with these checkers. It's very beautiful embroidery. That's the description. Ushmuel Amar Milas Levana Hitzielahem, that he laid out very, very white cloth, and that was also royal type of cloth. Karpas, what does it mean, karpas? Amar Rav Yosi Bar Chanina, Karim Shel Pasim. There were couches, or there were pillows of pasim, of many different colors. So it was a very fancy royal affair.
Is it a different spelling than the Seder Karpas?
It's not a different spelling. It's the same spelling. But it doesn't go the same way, because we are not eating pillows on Pesach. We are not.
Speak for yourself.
Some people do. Some people do radish. Some people do potatoes, and some people do pillows.
It's a svara,
and it's totally. That's why we're free. We could free do to whatever we want. We're free to eat whatever we want.
Eat a lot worse than pillows.
So. I've eaten much worse than pillows. I've eaten matzah. Okay. Al Galile Kesef Vamude Shesh. It was Galile Kesef Vamude Shesh. So you had these pillars that were made of Kesef and Shesh, marble. Mitos Zahava Kesef. You had these beds that were made of gold and silver. Tanya Rabbi Huda Aymer Haroy Lakesef Lakesef Haroy Lezav Lazav. Rabbi Huda says, what does it mean? It was Zahava Kesef. Which one was it? He says, well, it depended on the person. The people who were more chashuv, they got the zav. The people who were less chashuv, they only got the kesef. Says the Gemara, wait a minute, Amalav Rav Chanina, imkein atamatul kinim besuda. If you're going to say that, then there's going to be resentment, there's going to be jealousy. What do you mean? Why do you get a zav? Why did he put you in the zav? Why did he put you in the kesef? And the kesef people are going to be, they're going to be jealous of the zav people. So you're putting... You're making kino, you're making resentment in the Seuda, which is supposed to be a time of frivolity and folly. So you can't do that. I don't know. I don't know. How would Achashverosh determine who is chashuv and who is not? I don't know the answer to that, but as the Gemara continues, we'll see in a few lines, he was extremely particular with each person. He seemed to have a working knowledge of every single person that came to the party. So much so, as we'll see, that he knew the ages of people and gave them wine that was corresponding to their age, one year above their age, just above their age. So he knew intimately each of the party goers. I don't know if there was, I don't know if he had people that were scouting these people out. I don't know exactly how that worked, but it was an incredible affair. It was so particular that he knew each person. What's the relevancy of the details of the feast? I don't know.
I thought it was a party celebrating the 70 years since the desecration of the temple. I thought that's the whole shtick of it. So having the Jews there and then having the Kehillah of the Beis Hamikdash substantiates, and that's the whole calculation. Perhaps. And that's the problem that it wasn't actually 70 years. So I thought that's the
it could be. And then so then addressing his question about the details, the fine details of the party. Is that just to show his grandeur? I mean,
I think that it illustrates that he's the ultimate captor of the Jews. He knows exactly what their deal is, and that's why he can do whatever. Instead of not having any clue what's going on with them and letting them run the show, he knows exactly what every one of their ages is. He knows exactly what the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash is, and he's doing this because of that. Not because he's ignorant, because he's malicious.
Yes, right. for some reason Ahasuerus was, well, first of all, Ahasuerus was needed because, first of all, through him and Esther came about Daryavesh II from Paras, who ended up helping the Jews actively build the second base of Mikdash. So we needed Ahasuerus for that.
And he usurped the Malchus.
Ahasuerus and Esther's son. That would be one answer. The other answer is that he was spared for the sake of the Jewish salvation, meaning that the Jews were deserving of destruction at this time, and therefore, in order to keep to bring about their redemption, we needed Ahasuerus at the helm.
The narrative doesn't work without him. He usurped the power from Vashti. Vashti is the Bas Malach, so he has the power through her.
Yeah.
So if he gets eliminated, there's no narrative at all. She's just going wild, and then Esther can't come into it.
Vashti going wild. It wouldn't be called Megillas Esther. It would be Vashti
gone wild.
Vashti gone
wild. It would have been all the rage in somewhere around this general area. But it does not work without him directing the narrative.
Yeah, it would have been like a Hollywood production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vashti gone wild.
Yeah. Mosul presents.
Yeah.
But
all right, that's enough
enough
to wake us up.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right. Well, that's what we got. I mean,
wake him out of this sleep.
I can't post it. I can't even post this. I can't post tonight's cheer.
What's Shabbat gonna do?
Vashti gone wild. I mean, this is what's gonna end up on BTYA Torah.
Next time, it'll be 25 people at your cheer.
Oh my God. Yeah. Exactly. Everybody wants to know what the sequel to Vashti gone wild is. Okay. Here we go. Back here. These are all good points. I'm molded to all them. or not. I don't know. I really don't know anymore. I don't know what's going on here. Anyway, says the Gemara. Very good. So Amar lo Rav Nechemi inkinata matakina b'tzuda shel. You're gonna put resentment if you're gonna tell me that some people deserve gold, some people deserve silver. So as Ella Rav Nechemi says, Heim shel kesef lezav. Ella. Heim shel kesef, v'raglehem shel zav. They were made of kesef, and their raglayim, the actual feet of the chairs and the couches were made of zav. So he doesn't want to touch it that certain people deserve to be in certain places. What's interesting, Tosfos brings down, is that Rav Nechemia has this objection. How can you seat certain people who deserve to be in gold and certain people who deserve to be in silver when that's going to cause resentment? The Gemara before had said, those who were roy, those who were fit to be in the Gina belonged in the Gina. Those who deserve to be in the Chatzar belonged in the Chatzar. Those who deserve to be in the Bisan were in the Bisan. Why didn't the Gemara have an objection then? You're doing the same thing. There's the same problem of resentment. So Tosa says, no, there's not going to be resentment when people can't really see each other. In other words, people in the garden are totally separate from the people in the Chatzar. They can't see one another. But if you're in the same room, and then, you know, some people are seated in gold and some people get silver and they're told where they're to sit, it's going to cause resentment. Anyway, so says the Gemara goes on, and it says, Bahat Vashesh. What does Bahat Vashesh mean? Am Ravasi Avanim Shemischotatina Baalehen. Bahat can also be understood. The hay and the ches are interchangeable as Bahat Shemischotatos Baal Baalehen. They're so desirable. We're talking about Avanim. They were made of stones, meaning the flooring was made of this beautiful stone that people desire, that's so desirable. The Chenu Omer Avnei Nezer, the crowns, the stones of the crown, Misnosisos Alad Maso, they are desired, they are sought after on their land. So the same thing here, Bahat Vashesh is a reference to the majesty of even the flooring, the finest of finest details in this palace. And in that book also, it has some of the relics of that stuff. It's fascinating stuff, absolutely. I mean, some of the stuff is like, wow, how they made that without the tools that we have nowadays. It's really amazing. V'dar v'socharis is also made of dar v'socharis, which are, again, these are very obscure words. They don't really show up in other places. Rav amar dari dari. Rav says dar refers to dari dari. What does dari dari mean? It means that they are made of rows. They're meaning they have rows surrounding each of the ceramic tiles. They have these rows and these circular stones. Ushmuel Amar Eventova Yesh Bakarchi Ayam. There's this beautiful stone in the in this the sea of the cities. I don't know where Karchi Ayam is. Vidarashma, its name is Dara. Hoshiva Be'emsa Sa'uda, he placed this stone. He got a hold of this stone, Achashverosh did. He placed it in the middle of the Sa'uda, Ume'ir Lahem Katsaharayim. And it would brighten up the feast for them, like the afternoon. And that's where the word Sacharis means, come from the word Sahar. Sahar is a moon. So it would brighten up like the moon. So it was this beautiful stone that the Achashverosh seemed to be able to get his hands on. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tana Shakara Dror. What does Dar mean? Dar is a lashon of Dror, which means freedom. The Chol Bali Schora. Socharis is for Schora, meaning people, generally people who had Schora, who had business, they had to pay a tax, 17%, if you will. And because of his, because of this feast, he canceled out this this tax, and nobody had to pay.
You just equated VAT to the taxes of the oppressors?
He called it a mas, we call it a mam. It's the same thing. V'hashkos b'chlei zahav v'keilim mikeilim shonim. They drank from golden vessels, and the keilim were mikeilim shonim. So the lashon of mikeilim shonim is strange, because mishunim ibayale, it should say mikeilim mishunim. They were from different types of vessels. But shonim means that they were repetitive. How can a vessel be repetitive? So the Gemara says, Amarava yatsa basko. There was a basko that came out from Shemayim v'amr lahem and said to them, the partygoers, Rishonim kolum ipnei kelim. The Rishonim, meaning Baal Shetzer and his people, they were destroyed because of these kelim. V'atem shonim bahem. And you're repeating it. Fools. What are you doing? You're using the same kelim Baal Shetzer got killed with. Unbelievable. V'yei malchus, rav. And there was a royal wine that was rav. Now, if the Pasuk wanted to say that it was a royal wine that was harbe, then it should have said harbe. But rav means it was greater. What does it mean it was greater? So Amar Rav, Rav says, Malamin shekol echad le'echad, hashkehu yayin shegadol himenu b'shanim. Like I said, every single person was given to drink a wine that was older than himself, which is an incredible thing. Again, he must have known the particulars of each of the partygoers in order to be able to craft this kind of scene. It's an unbelievable thing. V'hashasiyah chadas. The drinking was chadas. It was like the law. What does it mean it was like the law? My chadas, Amr of Chanan Mishum Rabbi Meir, Kedash Shel Torah. It was like the Jewish law. Ma das shotara achilam ruba mishtia, just like the law of the Torah, achila is always greater than shtia. And Rashi says, what does that mean? It means that on the mizbeach, you brought this great carbon, you brought this bull or this ram, and you brought this little bit of nesech, of yayin nesech. So you always had the achila of the mizbeach was always greater than its shtia, than its drink. So too. In this mesiba, there was this great mishteh. There was always food greater than the actual drink. And Marsha in the back brings down, why did Achashverosh do Kedash Shel Torah? Why did he really care? So he thought, Marsha wants to say that he thought the reason why Belshazzar died is not because he was using Kalim Shonim. The reason why Belshazzar died was because of other things. He wasn't conducting himself api the Torah in other ways. So he made sure that the mishteh was totally Kedash Shel Torah. But he messed up.
So the kelim were just a symptom?
Yeah, they were just, exactly. They were just a symptom. Mm-hmm. They had nothing, that really wasn't the ikker. The ikker was they weren't in Kedash Shel Torah. So he made sure that his seuda was Kedash Shel Torah. Afshu dasa shalosa rasha achilim rubin shtiyah. He did the same thing. Ein ones, it was not forced. Amar Rabbi Elazar, melamed shekolecha ve'echad hashkeu yimayim yedinasa. Each person was fed a wine from his own country. That's what it means, that it was not forced, meaning that a person tasted his own wine. So for him, it was glorious. He was able to drink his own wine. La'asos kiritzon ish va'ish, to do the ratzon of each man. But it says ish v'ish. Amarava, la'asos kiritzon Mordechai v'Haman. He wanted to do the ratzon of Mordechai and Haman. Mordechai d'chsiv ish Yehudi, Haman ish tsar v'oyev. Rashi brings down that Kirtzon Mordechai v'Haman, one of the very last Rashi's in the bottom line, Heim hayu sari hamashkim b'mishteh. Both Mordechai and Haman were the sari hamashkim. And therefore, he was doing kirtzon ish va ish. Each person that poured the wine had his own ratzon in it. Haman's ratzon was that the Jews should drink from foul wine, from wine that wasn't kosher of the chule, and Mordechai's was the opposite. So he did kirtzon ish va ish. Each person was able to do it their own way. Amar Rava. Rava says, Lasos Kirtzon Mordechai Vahama Mordechai Dechsiv Ishu Hudi Haman Ishu Zitzar Voyev. Period. Fine. Gam Vashti Hamalka Asasa Mishtein Hashem. Also, Vashti made a party, Beis Hamalchus, in the king's house. That says, Gemara, that's strange. Beis Hanashimi Bayale. She should not be making a party in the king's house. She should be making it in the women's quarters. So Amar Rav, Rav says, Shneim ledvar aveir neskavnu. They were both in it together. They both had bad, evil intentions. And Haidud Amar Inshi, this is what people mean when they say, Ihu Bakari. He eats the big gourds, Ve'itse, and his wife eats the babutsini. She eats the small gourds. And that is to say, I don't know what it means about gourds and whatnot, but that is to say that they both had dvar aveir in mind, and therefore, she was conducting a feast for women right where the men were. So they were both pritzistik, in other words. Both Achashverosh and Vashti were pritzistik, and that is the end of Vashti Gone Wild.
Best cure of Gemara Shir will ever be.
Yeah. I mean, I'm telling you, I was probably